medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the Business Solutions Lead at Colas IS Support. Back with me this week, and most weeks, is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hout Cooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul. Glad to see that you actually are still on the mend enough that you could be with us today.
Yes. Thank you. Definitely getting better each day, but it's like at a snail's pace. I went back into the doctor for the fourth time in 2 months. And I tested negative for everything, including intelligence. But apparently I have nothing wrong with me. I just have to suck it up. But I have been able to run 3 times this week, slowly but surely getting back, managing my heart rate. But as you can still tell, I'm still stuffed up and I do have a tickle. So I'm still getting there, but it is what it is. This is probably the longest I can ever remember being sick. And I just hope that this isn't like the new normal. But anyway, so that's what's happening there. Now, last week for our Midwesternism, we talked about the fact that you were heading back up. Dad had to have a procedure and all went well, I assume. Yeah.
Yes, all went well.
Excellent.
There's always the waiting game that you have to play for. Mm-hmm. I can be transparent. My father had something removed and had it biopsied. So there's a little bit of a waiting game now. But on the bright side, the doctor, or the surgeon, I should say, did say, well, they do look a lot at tissue samples. And she said it didn't look super suspect. So I guess we'll take that as a win and just keep our fingers crossed for the next week or so.
Absolutely. That is a positive sign. But yeah, we have to hold our breath until we get the full results. But I'm glad everything went well. Now, also while you were there, you had the opportunity to hit the monthly family fish fry. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to tell people what that experience was like.
It was awesome. Okay, first of all, it's great to be able to see my family since I have moved out of state in basically 2023. I have not been able to spend as much time with them. So it was great to see a couple of my uncles and a couple of my aunts and the cousin at the fish fry at the BFW in the metropolis of Zumbrota.
Oh, Zumbrota. Wow.
Yes.
Nice.
Yeah.
Population?
Not very many.
Okay.
More than Mazeppa, which is where my dad was raised, which had less than 100.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So the fish fry was fabulous. To answer your question from last week, I did ask. It was walleye.
Ah, yes. Very cool.
So
I figured.
Very appropriate.
It wasn't your dad's comment. What did you expect? I mean,
right,
come on.
Pretty
I
much.
Mean, you've got pike, you've got bass, you've got crappie, you've got sunfish, you got bluegill. I mean, at the end of the day, it could have been anything. You got perch. Everybody loves perch. So why did it have to be walleye? Although, you know, everybody loves walleye too, but.
True. They love walleye. So yes, it was walleye. I did not try it. I stuck with my steak, which was pretty good. Maybe in a future episode, we can cover another supper club to visit while here as well.
Very cool. Yes.
Yeah.
You're on the supper club tour. We're going to have to get like a map of all the supper clubs in Minnesota and start putting pins in them.
I know. Well, there's a lot both in Minnesota and Wisconsin. So we could probably do a supper tour that would last us a long time.
That's great. I'm sure health-wise, that's going to be good too.
Well, I guess I better keep up my long distance running.
Yeah, exactly. So
yes.
Speaking of running, before we get into logic extensions this week with workflow, how was it being back in the nice, brisk, crisp Minnesota winters when you're running?
Well, truthfully, the only really crisp day I had was Sunday, where I think I woke up and the temperature was like 14, feels like 3.
Oh,
that wasn't as pleasant, but got her done, got my 6 miles that I wanted to run that day done. I don't know that I warmed up until about 4 p.m. and I ran pretty early. So, But that's okay. And then actually, it hasn't been that bad here. Today's high, I think, is in the upper 40s. It's supposed to be close to 50 here today. So my morning temperatures have been in the 30s. So I'm going to take that as a huge win because I know what it could be like this time of year. It could be below zero.
Absolutely.
So I'm taking it as a big win.
Nice.
It's been fun to run back around. I love running in Rochester. The city has done such a great job with all the trails that are around here and roads have great sidewalks. And the city planners did a great job to make this a very exercise-friendly community.
So. Yeah, outdoor-friendly, exercise-friendly. And it does make a big difference. And that is really nice. So
yeah.
Now, you get to go from wind chill -3 to, I don't know, the tropics. I hear, because we're taking the next couple of weeks off.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Hawaii for my first time ever.
Oh, yay. Very cool. I'm
very excited to be hopping on a jet plane the other way.
Uh-huh.
So,
yes. Very cool.
Yes. Yes, I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to a little R&R that's been on my bucket list of places to visit. So, looking forward to it.
All right. We keep on checking off that bucket list. That's awesome. All right. Yes. Well, I'm sure everyone will miss us for a couple of weeks, but I'm sure they'll get over it. This week, though, we continue our conversation with Hyann Wong about logic extensions. She takes us through a little bit more sophisticated ones. So if last week was the 101, this is the, I don't know, 110. I don't think it's quite the 210, but who knows? Anyway, this week we talk through another practical, you know, use case for leveraging logic extensions and how they can work with other capabilities like workflow and orchestrations and whatnot. So hopefully everybody enjoyed last week. If you didn't listen to that episode yet and you're curious about logic extensions, by all means, go to episode 98, check it out. We give you a great overview and she just does a fabulous job of walking us through a very basic yet powerful example. And this week, she takes it to the next level. And I don't know, I learned a lot from both these episodes. It really actually increased my curiosity as to why I don't hear about it as much. I mean, maybe people are leveraging it, but I don't know. I mean, this has got a lot of power to it. I think we were both pretty shocked at what you can actually accomplish with this. And I think you're looking forward, as we talked about, to trying it out. Yeah.
Yes, I absolutely am. Like you said, this conversation where we talk about some of the buttons with workflows, that got me really jazzed up. And I think I actually have some potential solutions designed in my head for some challenges we have in my organization. Actually,
awesome.
For some systems that we want to eliminate that actually handle workflow for us outside of JD Edwards. Guess what? I think I can bring this right back.
Nice. So, very, very
cool. Excited. Yes.
All right. Well, without further ado, Hyann Wong and Logic Extensions with Workflow, everyone. Enjoy.
For my next example, for those of you who can't see, I put the same address book application on a page side by side. On the left, I have the default version. On the right, I have a specific vendor version. And then I'm going to select the same record on both sides. So Chandra, can you tell me what difference you notice like right away?
Yeah, there's an update mailing button.
Really?
On the address book revision screen on the right for the supplier.
Yes. Okay. I wonder what that is.
Me too. Oh, wait a minute. I can't do anything. All the fields on the right are all grayed out. How am I supposed to update my address?
So this is the second example that I wanted to show. So if you want to govern a specific process, in this case, we say, okay, you cannot just update the mailing address for a provider, for a vendor at will. We need to centralize that, and then we need someone to actually approve the change that is made to that vendor. So I need to press that button, the update mailing button that Chandra just described. And then I need to type in the new address for that supplier. Well, that one loads. I want to show Chandra what I did there.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So form extension again. So I opened the form extension for address book revision. And then I have this update mailing button, which is part of the form extension metadata. Other than that, nothing special. But when I click on the associate orchestrations link, and then I selected the logic extensions tab, you see that there are three logic extensions that I'm calling from this form. The first one is dialog is initialized, and then I'm calling a logic extension which actually hides the control for version. We'll get to that soon. And in post dialog is initialized, I disable form controls for a version. So all the controls on the mailing tab, I disabled all those through a logic extension for the version on the right. And then the last one, of course, when I click that button, I simply kick off the workflow. So on the form extension, I just click the first logic extension from the form extension where I am passing in the version name of this application into the logic extension. I also pass in the push button that I added in the form extension along with the version name into the logic extension. So that's the first logic extension. I just want to go over them all so we don't have to jump back and forth.
Sure.
The first logic extension is just the version plus one single push button. The second logic extension, again, I pass in the version name and I pass in pretty much all the controls on the second tab. So I just clicked on the map form controls tab, and then there is an icon where you can click. And then once you click that, you get to see all the controls that you are adding to that form controls list. So these are all the controls that I am telling logic extensions to basically do something with them. And then the third one is actually a pretty simple one, the push button clicked event for that update mailing. I'm just taking a few values from the input, and then I'm going to kick that logic extensions off. So back to the studio. The first one is I want to hide that button for a specific version. And this one has two items in the data structure. The first one is the version itself. The second one is a single control in this case. So since now I'm passing the version of the application into the logic extension, I can just do a simple conditional check. Is this version that specific vendor version? If it's not, I just hide that control. So I hide that whatever control is passed in based on the version, the value of the version. And that's Chandra is nodding. So that means he's liking
it. I get it.
Yes, you can see the light bulbs.
I know. I was like, you know, is going on. This use case for me really resonates, really helps me grasp what I can do, because this is something, an area that I'm very familiar with, address book and talking about the data governance, right? That's huge in a lot of organizations. We've discussed that with a couple customers in previous episodes where data governance is so important now, and we want to make sure that it goes through a workflow. So This is awesome. Thank you.
Right. So this is how you can control basically implementing your own custom workflow, if you will, your specific workflow. I hate using the word custom because we're trying to get away from custom. But the reality is you have your own workflows that you've defined.
Your business has required workflows that it wants to follow that maybe JD Edwards can't do out of the box, proverbially. Well, now it can.
Right. Well, you can define your own workflows, right? And then you can use the combination of form extension and logic extension to implement them without having to actually customize anything. And that's huge.
That's huge.
Absolutely.
That's a game changer.
Right. Yeah. And one of the limitations.
This is the legal game changer.
That's true.
That's right. That's kind of funny. It actually is. One of the limitations that we spoke about the last time the three of us were together with a few others, though, was about the fact that form extensions doesn't operate based on version. Remember, we always get this question, can I do form extensions by version? And the answer is no. And the generic answer is it's not built that way. It's not architected that way, which many have pushed back and said, that sounds like a functions as design. It's like, no. We provided a more detailed explanation of exactly what that is, right? It's a bit of a misinterpretation of how forms and versions go together. Okay. We don't have an instance of a form for every processing option version that exists. Like, there's just one instance of the form, and you pass it whatever version, and it behaves based on that version. So if we had multiple instances, if it was a one-to-one relationship, we could absolutely do what you want. It's not a one-to-one relationship. It's a one-to-many or a many-to-one, depending on which one you want to look at. It's a many version to one form relationship. But because of logic extensions now, you can still tailor your form extension behavior based on version using a logic extension. And that's what Haiyan's showing. So this gets you beyond that, hey, we don't even need form extensions by version because we've got logic extensions to control that. And that's actually more powerful than what was being asked for when it came to form extensions by version.
So instead, you actually over-delivered.
There you go. Yes.
On that topic, I actually poked fun at the audience 3 years ago at Bloomberg 4D.
I think I remember this.
Do you remember what I asked? I asked the people, if you have ever opened up an application for a specific version in FDA, please raise your hand. I would love to learn from you.
Right.
Because you have some very magical powers if you have done that.
If you've done that, yes.
Yes.
But it's a simple misunderstanding, right? I mean, it's just people interpret things, and that just locked in people's head that that must be the way that things were done. And it's like, actually, no, it's not. And once you explain that, I think people get it.
Yes.
But then once you introduce this capability, people are like, ah, I don't care about that anymore because now I know how to do it.
So, and I will say, as some less technical BAs that may have asked you that question, they've probably never been in form design aid. So for them, that question is like, oh, I didn't know that that was a thing. You know what I mean? It's like they may not understand because usually they go back to their developers and maybe the developer just says, oh, we can't do that. And the BA doesn't understand what that means or why. So explaining it to say, oh, well, here's the reason, the many to one type of relationship, and that you can't actually open each one of these to customize them in Form Design Aid. That was helpful for me, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Like, when you did that and explained it that way in that, I was like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah, that relationship just wasn't there. But though, when you describe it, it crystallizes. It's just like, oh, okay. I see. I have an app and it's got multiple versions, and those versions are of the processing options. It's got one set of processing options, one to one.
Yep.
But multiple versions of the processing options, not multiple versions of the app.
App itself. Exactly. So, yes.
But again, we get around that now because we've got this magic of logic extensions to be able to pass in version information and be able to control how a form renders and how it behaves now based on version and what sort of workflows get kicked off. So awesome.
Yeah, this is, again, if it's that version, I want to disable a few things. And that's what I just showed on the web client. So now let's go to the last logic extension example. This is a very simple one. It just kicks off the workflow. And then, Chandra, you mentioned that you have your own workflows. Now you can actually easily trigger that workflow with the help of logic extension through form extension or through orchestration if you prefer. But now everything is all available for you without doing any customization work. So at the very core of the extensibility framework is this combination of form extensions and logic extensions. So together, they are a major driver, in my opinion, of de-customization. It will help the customers to replace the traditional custom modifications with governed upgrade-friendly extensions.
Agreed.
This is phenomenal. I love it.
I'm very excited
to start playing.
Well, and I'm happy to hear you say that because I think by default, sometimes you're going to get a request like this and you immediately think developer, you immediately think I've got to go to the developer to get this changed. You didn't know per se, and many out there may not know what's within reach, right?
Right.
What's actually well within reach. Like before you go to the developer, you might be able to prototype something using a form extension combination with a logic extension to say, wait, maybe I could accomplish that on my own. And even if you can't, you could prototype that and then share that along with the requirement with the developer to say, all right, this is what we're looking for. This is what we're getting. I can't quite get this to work, or this doesn't quite cover it, but this now puts context to the requirements, and maybe you're even going to get faster turnaround on that. Or you're just going to be able to do it yourself and prototype it for the actual user on the fly and be like, all right, that's great. I've got this as a proof of concept. I've already validated it with my user. Now let me go talk to my team and figure out, is this the right way to implement this? Or do we want to do it another way? But it gives you much more power at your fingertips, I think. Tell me I'm wrong, that's fine.
Okay. I agree. I will say, however, for some BAs, this is going to be a little bit more technical, right? You're looking at some stuff, in my opinion, that might be more of a technical BA versus a purely functional BA, might be able to give you the good requirements on it, but you might need somebody more technical to help with that, just based on some of the logic that I've seen here. I look at it and think this is going to take me some time to really, I think, understand from a technical perspective. I can see it. I get it conceptually. I think for me to get my mitts on it and start playing with it, there's going to be some, as I always say, banging my head against the wall moments where I do this. Oh, that didn't work right. Okay, let me try this. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's fine with me. I get that. But I think somebody that is purely more functional, they may struggle with some of this.
Right. I mean, when you pull this up, Hyann, you were doing a great job. I love these examples, but it's like, oh, I associated it with this event. Yeah. Right. Dialogue is initialized. It's like,
that's
okay.
A little technical. Yes.
A lot of BAs haven't opened up FDA to have seen that or know what those events are. So there's going to take some familiarity. This is where a BA potentially partnering with one of their developers to say, okay, let's work on a logic extension together and start to understand this and break it down would accelerate that learning process potentially. There's also some concepts, like you said, arrays. Sorry, that's definitely a developer concept or construct, not necessarily something that a BA is going to be like, oh yeah, I know everything about arrays. Oh, here we go. No problem. That'll take a little bit getting used to. And how often are you going to use that? Your use cases may not be that complicated that an array is required. So again, some of this stuff, great when you want to do more complicated things. For the basic straightforward stuff, like the stuff that Hyann was just going through, you don't need those constructs, right? So, and I can totally appreciate there's constructs there, there's events and other things. This assumes some level of familiarity with almost FDA and how our applications function and flow and stuff like that, which not everybody necessarily has. You got to, you know, give us a little bit of a break potentially because, hey, guess what? We're trying to replace customizations. And that means you've probably already done the customization, which means you're already familiar with this. And so these constructs are not difficult to get because you're basically replacing one for the other. That may be a terrible assumption because what I would like to get to point is what we were describing, where a business analyst can sit with a user, understand what the requirement is, and be able to go into something like form extensions and logic extensions and start to at least put together the framework for something like this, maybe even prototype with an end user to accelerate that solution process. So, cool.
Great.
All right. Why don't you give us one more thing, Hyann, and then we got to get to the Midwesternism of the day. And some of us have some meetings, I guess, that we have to get to. Oh, no. So,
my day job is getting in the way of my podcasting job.
This is true. So How do you wrap this up with a bow? And then we'll get to Chandra's Midwesternism.
Okay, so logic extensions, the result is faster delivery of business logic changes with governance, repeatability, and fewer lifecycle overheads than traditional customizations. And then here on the screen, I have a list of tables that put named event rules versus logic extensions side by side. And then you can see how much more functionalities that we're providing in logic extensions than the traditional named event rules. Named. So go at it, have fun. And then we would like to hear your feedback.
Absolutely.
I would love if we could incorporate this into our show notes.
That's what
or
I was
link to it somehow or something. This I is a great, I love yeah. this. This is really cool.
We will provide a link in the show notes to some of the artifacts that you have high end. And that way folks yeah. can maybe even some of the screen prints of some of these examples so people can follow along. Very, very cool. Awesome.
Very cool. This was amazing. Thank you.
All right. So. The Midwesternism of the day. Let's take Hyann through what you've come up with. We have an update.
We do. This is a follow-up to episode 96, Midwesternism, where I covered the snowplow naming contest in Minnesota. The results are in. I got notified this week. I was very excited. So this is a follow-up. And this article that is in one of the publications, I'm not sure which one, the first line of the article says, "Oh, for fleet's sake." Just yeah. as Minnesotans are preparing to forget about the existence of snowplows for just a few months, MnDOT has crowned the winners of its annual Name a Snowplow contest. There were more than 19,000 gosh darn Minnesotans casting a vote to determine the names for 8 snow plows, culled from a list of over 30 finalists that were full of snowy puns and very, very Minnesotan turns of phrase. So,
oh gosh,
I know this is amazing.
That was hard to even articulate. Well done, well delivered. Holy cow!
Yes, so the winners of the snowplow naming contest in Minnesota for this year. Number one, well, it doesn't say number one. They're actually, each snowplow goes to a different district in Minnesota. So each district, I think, got its own snowplow with a name. So, oh, for Sleet's sake, District 3, Central Minnesota. Flurious George, District 6, Southeast Minnesota. Sled Zeppelin, District 2, Northwest Minnesota. K-pop Blizzard Hunter, District 8, Southwest Minnesota. Mini Snow Ta, District 1, Northeast Minnesota. Every Day I'm Shoveling.
Yes.
District 7, South yes. Central Minnesota. Oh Brother, Where Art Plow? District 4, Western Minnesota. West Central Minnesota. Yeah, right.
For. I love
and this. Life of a Snow Girl. That's the Metro Twin Cities area.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
They've done this now for over 6 years, I believe, and they have named now 52 snowplows. Some previous winner names, Betty Whiteout and the Life of a Snow Girl's best bud, Taylor Drift.
It's Taylor Drift. Beautiful.
I know, right?
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yes, these are the fun things that you get to look forward to in Minnesota.
So is that Taylor Drift? Is that a take on Taylor Swift or Tokyo Drift or both?
I think it's probably the Taylor Swift.
I know.
Other named plows, Don't Flurry, Be Happy. Say It Ain't Snow.
Oh,
a plow. Wow. 867530 O'Brien.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, I love it. Oh, that might
Isn't
be my
that
favorite.
Awesome? Yes, fantastic. I know. Lots of great names out there that Jeez. This is just a fun thing. It's a very, I look forward to it. I yeah. find it very cool. Oh, they did have one AI, Arctic Intelligence.
Arctic Intelligence. Beautiful.
There you go.
That's fantastic. And
yes.
to be fair, I mean, you love puns. You've...
For those that don't know me,
yes,
I love so puns that's... and dad jokes.
Yeah,
I know.
This is right up your alley.
It so. Totally. Yeah. All right.
Awesome.
For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
We'll see you. Thanks again, Hi-Ann. Take
Thank
care.
You. Thank you. Good to see you. Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.